Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
You know, after we received the diagnosis of stage 4 cancer, our priorities were instantly turned upside down, but ultimately right side up. And having coffee with my wife became priority number one. And I sure wish I could have another cup of coffee with her today.
Everybody has a story, and everyone is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope.
And power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I
are a part of it.
We're not the hero.
This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. Dan Wheeler had it all. As a very successful host on QVC, he had traveled the world, met his heroes, he had money and fame. He and his wife Beth lived in their dream home. While she always seemed to understand and value the simple things in life, he was busy. His career was thriving and his drive for success was in top gear. Someday he would slow down. Someday he would have time to sit and have a cup of coffee with his wife. And then came a phone call that changed their world. Suddenly, their priorities were turned upside down. This is Chapter 35 of Epic, Dan Wheeler's story. So you were a guy who was always in a hurry. If you weren't doing something, quote unquote, productive, you felt like you were wasting your time?
We have a room in our home. When you come in, it's right to the right of the entryway, and it has French doors, and there's no TV in that room. There's a couch and a Lazy Boy chair and a hutch that my wife used to keep some family heirlooms in. And she'd love to sit in there and have her morning coffee. And often she would be sitting there having her coffee, and I'd come running through. And our nickname for each other, it started out being Baby Cakes, and then it evolved to Cakes, and then Cakeys. And she would tap the couch next to her and say, "Cakeys, come sit, have coffee." And regrettably, so many times I would say, "Cakeys, I don't have time to sit. I've got so much to do. I've got to get going with my day. I've got to get to QVC, or I've got to write this book," or whatever I was working on. And she, you know, after we received the diagnosis of stage 4 cancer, I always sat. Our priorities were instantly turned upside down, but ultimately right side up. And having coffee with my wife became priority number one. And I sure wish I could have another cup of coffee with her today, but I will in heaven.
So tell us about the diagnosis, how that came about. You knew she wasn't feeling well.
Yeah, it was the summer of 2012, and she kept complaining of stomach pain. She would describe it like the Pac-Man video game, waka, 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 like that Pac-Man was eating away at her stomach. And I would beg her, I'd say, "Cakeys, please get to the doctor." And her answer shocked me the first time she said, "I don't want to go to the doctor. She's just going to tell me I have cancer." And I was like, "Oh, dear Lord, Beth, please. I'm going to pick you up and physically take you." And she kept delaying it. I think she knew. You know, when she finally went and I was at work that day, I'll never forget, I came out of a meeting. I had all these texts from her, "Call home immediately. Call me. Where are you?" And when I called her, she said the doctor, they were doing an ultrasound, and they kept saying, "We don't like this. This looks like cancer." And she actually left their office, and the doctor called her and said, "You have to get back in here. We have to biopsy this." And so I ran out of Studio Park and got home and found her in our bedroom hugging a pillow and crying. And that was the longest weekend of my life. We had to wait and see if it was cancer, and we just hugged each other and prayed well into the night. You know, we got the diagnosis next week. It was cancer. And then you try to find the best surgeon you can, and we went to a very large hospital in Philadelphia, and they had the surgery on November 14th 2012. And the hospital was so big, it was like you sit in a waiting room that reminded you of O'Hare Airport. There
Wow.
were video screens that showed you where your patient was, who the doctor was, what room they were in. And when the surgery's over, they don't come and see you. You get a phone call. So they call my name after 6 or 7 hours. We're waiting and praying in front of all these people. And I pick up the phone, and he says, "Dan, you know, I went in. I did a total hysterectomy. I got what I could. Unfortunately." And when he said the word unfortunately, it was like a bomb went off inside my brain. He said, "Unfortunately, it's a more aggressive form of cancer than we thought. It has spread. It got outside of the uterus and throughout her abdomen, and all we can do is chemo." And you know, I'm basically crying in front of all these people. My daughter grabbed the phone. She's a nurse, and she started asking nursing questions. And wow, that was a long day. We went to a back room and cried and started calling people. I remember calling people, and we wanted to get her on everybody's prayer list as quickly as possible. And then we went up to her room when the screen said she was in a recovery room, and we were praying that she wouldn't ask us how the surgery went. Mm-hmm. She was still under the effects of the drugs, and she was kind of loopy. And I remember putting a pillow behind her head and kissing her, and she said, "Did they get it all?" And I said, "You still have a little bit in your tummy, babe, but we're going to get it with chemo, and you just relax. It's going to be fine." But inside, I was scared.
Yeah.
Trying to be brave for my kids and for Beth. And, you know, there's a story in my book about one afternoon when it started getting really bad. We were in a local hospital because she had a temperature, and she had this rash that was breaking out, and she was kind of talking out of her mind. She wasn't making sense. And I was just so worried about her. Like, my daughter said, "Dad, you need to take a break," because I'd been living at that hospital and hosting shows at night on QVC and going right back and basically going on no sleep. And so I had been trying to be brave for everybody. So I walked down the hall and I saw the elevator. The elevator opened and there was no one on it. And I got in it and just lost it. Mm-hmm. I was just weeping uncontrollably. And I got off on the first floor and I leaned against the wall. And I'm crying, and all of a sudden I hear, "Mr. Wheeler, Mr. Wheeler." And I turned around, and it was this wonderful doctor who'd been assigned to Beth. I knew he was a Christian the minute I met him, because he asked me how I was doing, and I said, "I've been talking to the great physician about our patient." And he smiled and said, "We're going to get along fabulously, because that's who I talk to about every patient I work on."
Oh, how encouraging.
So he came up to me, and he threw his arms around me, which doesn't happen in a hospital, a medical doctor, giving me a hug. And he said, "What's wrong, Mr. Wheeler?" And I said, "Dr. O, I said, it's just been really tough, and that woman is everything to me. And I've been praying so hard, and I hope God is hearing my prayers." And he said, "Oh, you wonder if God's hearing your prayers. Let me tell you what just happened to me, Mr. Wheeler." He said, "I have 26 patients waiting for me. I am never late. I, 2 minutes ago, was right at this elevator to get on it. Something told me to turn around and go back to the cafeteria." He said, "I walked back there, and I thought, what am I doing? I've got to get to my patients. I turned around. As I approached the elevator, I saw you crying. I knew why I had been delayed." He said, "Do you want to know if God hears your prayers? He had me right here, right now, to tell you he loves you very much. He's with you. And you know Jesus, Mr. Wheeler, and so does your wife. And if Jesus doesn't heal her now, she will be healed forever. Now I have to get up to my patients." He got on the elevator, and as I walked away, I thought, that was a miracle. God intersected his schedule to be there for me.
That had to be encouraging for you at a time where you were feeling probably so drained and riding that roller coaster of anxiety and hope and anxiety and hope and that having that experience.
You know, Meredith, it was so amazing to me as I look back on those 3 years. God knew what we needed when. He knew what I needed to see when, to know he was with me and to know that somehow it was all going to work out. And at the time, I didn't see it. But looking back, I see God's hand was in everything. He was with us on our journey. And that's why I wrote this book. I hope it can help a lot of people. I hope it can calm their fears, inspire their hope to know Jesus will never leave you. In your darkest hour, he's there.
The book's called Hurricane of Love. Do you want to describe a little bit about where that title came from and why?
Well, I have a niece who's a very talented writer, and she writes a blog called Tara Talking. And the day my wife passed into heaven, she wrote, "My Aunt Beth's love was like a hurricane. It hit everyone in its path." And I thought, Tara, that's perfect. That's going to be the title of Beth's biography, Hurricane of Love, My Journey with Beth Wheeler. And I knew it instantly, because she had this enviable ability to make you feel like you knew her all your life the moment you met her. She had so many people. I wrote in the book she had at least a dozen best friends. I've thought about it. It's probably 3 or 4 dozen. Everybody considered her their best friend.
You've talked a lot about how she always knew how to appreciate the little things in life, that she always understood. Just like the invitation to come sit by me, Keke's, and sit on the couch. She always knew that. Now, that wasn't the case for you. You have a very successful career. You've alluded to it, but describe a little bit about what your work life was like.
Well, you know, I think it goes back to growing up playing sports. I was always little for my age, and I was the little guy that had to prove himself. And I remember people saying, he's too short to make the varsity basketball team. And I just drove myself and practiced 4 to 5 hours a day and ended up being the captain of the team and went to Evangel on a baseball scholarship. And I just have, I almost think I had a fear of failure. When I really think about it, I was afraid to not be as good as I possibly could be, and that drive can destroy you. And I wanted to be the number one host at QVC. I wanted to get all the big shows, and I was blessed to, you know, do a lot of the very highly visible shows around the world and got to be at the Olympic Games and travel the world and met every hero I ever had. But, you know, that all changed. That all went away when you get a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, and I didn't know how long we had. And I realized what a special woman she was. And when I wasn't on the air during those 3 years, I was with her. And sometimes we would just hold hands and watch the sun go down. And, you know, that's last summer, we'd talk a lot about heaven, but she didn't really want to talk about her cancer or what was going on. I mean, we just lived every moment. I think we lived about 10 years in those 3 years because we had our priorities right. And that would be my message to people. You know, well, everyone dies, but very few people know how to live. My wife knew how to live. She may have only lived 61 years, but oh, how she lived.
Beth knew how to live, and Dan was learning. In the months ahead, he would get a crash course on how to live and love and how to keep the most important people in your life top priority. What he didn't know was how much time he had with his wife. Part 2 is coming up on Epic. Welcome back to Epic. Today, we're hearing Dan Wheeler's story. Here is part 2.
When you get a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, and I didn't know how long we had, when I wasn't on the air during those 3 years, I was with her. I think we lived about 10 years in those 3 years. You know, well, everyone dies, but very few people know how to live. My wife knew how to live. She may have only lived 61 years, but oh, how she lived. And you know, I have a chapter in the book called Chemo Dates. When we were told that she had to start chemo, and we started in January of 2013. We decided, hey, let's make the best of it. We went in this big building down in downtown Philadelphia, and on the first floor they had this bakery, and we found out they had chocolate croissants. Mm. And when we were dating in Chicago, we used to stop by where we worked at a little bakery and get chocolate croissants. So this took us back to our early dating life. So she would go up to check into the doctor's office on the third floor, and I'd go to the bakery and get the croissants and bring them up, and then they'd have cranberry juice or something up there in the suites. And we would, once we got into the chemo suite after her doctor's appointment, I'd heat them up in the microwave and we'd sit and eat them. And then at lunch, I'd go back down because the same bakery made this incredible tomato basil soup, which was our favorite. And I'd take that up at lunchtime and we'd eat it. And we discovered that if you're with the one you love, tomato basil soup and chocolate croissants can taste pretty good, even in a chemo suite. I'm sorry. But, those were, you know, that was a special time, and I'd give anything just to have that back. It's been almost 3 years, and, you know, it's writing the book was very difficult. But, you know, she was so worth it, and I hope people will pick up the book to learn about Beth Wheeler. She was an amazing woman, and, you know, there's a lot of lessons in the book. I put things in bold that I really wanted people to understand, things that I learned, and some of it is just slowing down. Some of it is if you have a friend who's sick, don't call them and say, hey, whatever you need, call me, because they won't. Just show up. Show up with food, show up with a hug, show up with love. And if you are facing a life-threatening disease or someone you're caring for is, just pour all of your love into that situation. You will never regret it. Spend as much time as you can together and really get into the meaning of that. I mean, it drastically changed the course of my life, and I don't want to retire to the golf course. So I formed a ministry called Fearless Faith Ministries, and my message, my audience is really baby boomers. We do a thing on Facebook on our page called Fearless Faith. It's called Your Morning Cup of Inspiration. They're little 3-minute messages. And I want to tell people, we're in a point of life where we have our resources now and we have time, and let's go hard for the kingdom. Let's not just retire for a life of leisure. I don't think that's what God planned.
You said, I think a lot of us tell ourselves that someday things are going to slow down and we'll have more time to be with our families and our loved ones. And before we know it, we're 60 years old and we're still racing around trying to keep up with life instead of really living it. I think that describes, in American culture, that seems to describe a whole lot of people. It's almost as if we hold that up as that's success. And one of the things I love about your journey with Beth, it shines a really bright spotlight on what success really is.
Well, and when you say someday, I'll slow down. And for so many people, someday never comes. They wake up one morning and they get a stage 4 cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I never thought it would happen to me. My wife and I used to joke around. I'd always say, I'm going to go first, definitely. And never thought she would, but we have right now, and you know the old saying that yesterday is history, tomorrow's a mystery, but today is a gift. That's why it's called the present. Every minute counts. We don't have time to hold grudges. We don't have time to be angry or be separated as Christians because they believe in post-tribulation and they believe in pre-trib. And you know what? We have to let our light shine. We have to let Jesus shine through us. When he left his light, he was the light of the world, but it didn't leave. He put it in the disciples, and we have to let it shine every day.
So as you neared the end of Beth's journey, first of all, it was a very difficult time, obviously, but there were some pretty incredible things that happened along that where God showed up to give you hope. Can you tell about some of those?
Absolutely. When she decided she was going to stop treatment, that was the hardest thing ever. After thousands of hours at the doctor's offices and chemo suites and procedures and surgeries because her tumors were growing, we had to have them drained, we had to have stents put in. When she said that was it, I knew she was calling the shots. Mm-hmm. Of course, I wanted to selfishly keep her here, but she lived for 11 days after she stopped the treatment, and we have a neighbor named Daryl, helicopter mechanic, salt of the earth, wonderful guy. Speaking is not his gift, but he loves the Lord with all his heart. One morning, and I wanted to stay in bed with Beth as long as I could every morning because she'd been in hospitals for weeks and we weren't able to be in the same bed together. But one morning, I felt like the Lord was telling me I needed to get up and walk towards the kitchen, and it wasn't just to get a cup of coffee. And as I went by my front door, I heard a faint knock, and I never would have heard it from the bedroom. I opened the door, and here is Daryl, and he says, Dan, I've been up all night wrestling with God, but I'm certain I have a message for Beth. And, you know, most people you'd say, well, I don't know, but I trusted Daryl. I said, let me check. And Beth said, well, yeah, can I get cleaned up first? So he waited in my kitchen 45 minutes while we got her cleaned up. He walked in, and I swear to you, Meredith, he transformed into Billy Graham that day.
Oh, my goodness.
It was the most powerful message I've ever heard. He said, Beth, I have good news. Jesus is here, and he's going to heal you. He's either going to heal you now and you'll get up and we'll have a party, or he's going to heal you forever and you'll be able to get out of this mess of a world before the rest of us. But he's here. And he went on to tell the story of the woman in Matthew chapter 9 who had an issue of blood, which was so profound to me because Daryl had no idea that was Beth's issue. The chemo had destroyed her bone marrow, so she stopped producing platelets. We need platelets. When we get cut, it helps heal it. And her platelets were just crashing, and that was the problem. And he had no idea. And he said, this woman knew that if Jesus walked by, she just needed to reach up and touch the hem of his garment. And he finished, and I walked him out, and I said, Daryl, I had tears streaming down my face. I said, where did that come from, Daryl? And he goes, I don't know. That wasn't me speaking in there. And I go, yeah, you were like Billy Graham. That was amazing. And he said, Dan, I'm telling you, it was God. It was the Holy Spirit. So Beth could not even lift her hand. She was swollen with fluid. She couldn't lift her hand to wipe a tear. When we would see tears, we'd have to wipe them from her several times over the course of that next week. With her eyes closed, asleep, her hands would shoot straight up in the air. She was reaching out to touch Jesus. Her eyes were fixed on a corner of the bedroom and just staring up there. And finally one day I said, Beth, what do you see? And she got a smile and she said, heaven. It was hard for her to talk then. And I said, is it beautiful? She said, yes. One morning she says, hi, Daddy. I said, Beth, do you see your dad? And she got this sheepish look on her face like, I know you can't see him, but yeah, I do. Oh. And we had found out just a couple years earlier that her dad had accepted the Lord before he died. Her pastor had called and shared it, and we didn't know. And my daughter was with me. We're like, Mom, you see your dad. But she had glimpses of heaven. One chapter is called An Angel in My Driveway. And I play in a classic rock band that raises money for charities. We don't take any money. But I play bass and guitar, and I always knew I was in this band to reach this one guy. His name's John. And we became really good friends over the years. And when it was becoming apparent that Beth was dying, when she stopped treatment, I started calling people and bringing them in, flying them in from all over the country, family and friends. And this was when I finally reached out to people, because everybody said, everything, anything you need, call me. So I started calling people and just saying, I need you to go to the airport. My home is over an hour away from the Philadelphia airport, and I didn't want to leave Beth.
Right.
And so I just called John. I said, I need you to pick up my buddy. His name is Brian, and Brian is in Fearless Faith with me, the ministry I started. They dropped Brian off. It was probably 11:30, close to midnight, and we're standing in my driveway with John, the guy in my band, his wife, and Brian. And I noticed John wasn't saying anything, and I thought he kind of had a weird look on his face. And when they left, I said to Brian, I said, was John okay on the way from the airport? And Brian said, man, he talked my ear off. We talked, we laughed, and he said, yeah. And I go, huh, I guess he was just tired. And we went in and went to sleep. And the next morning, I walk out to get coffee, and my sister said, you have to call your neighbor Dana. John saw something. I'm like, okay. So I called Dana, who's John's friend. She works with him, and she said, John needs to talk to you. So I called John. He said, yeah, I have to tell you something. Can I come over tonight? I said, sure, come over. So after work, I met him out in my driveway. I hopped in his car. I said, John, what's up? What did you see? And he said, Dan, I know you know I've done a lot of drugs in my day, but I know what I saw. And he said, I also know that you know I'm not a spiritual person. I hardly believe in anything, but I know what I saw. I go, John, what did you see? He goes, well, while you were talking last night, he said, this being appeared right over you, right behind you. I said, a being? What do you mean? He said, well, it was like had a cloak, and I couldn't see a face, but it looked like a robe, but it was so bright. He said the light was shimmering, and he, you know, with his hands, it was like light dancing off of water. And he said, I had to close my eyes. I couldn't look. It was so bright. And when I opened my eyes, you were talking, and it was gone. He said, but as you spoke, it appeared again, right over you. And again, I had to look away. And like he said, I thought it was going to burn my eyeballs. It was so bright. I said, John, what do you think it was? And he said, I think it was an angel. I said, John, I know it was. You know, there's so much prayer going on in that bedroom. I think there's angels all around us. Well, after he left, I stood in the spot where he saw the angel, and I thought, wow, he was given a gift. And then as I walked in, I realized so was I. It was my birthday. It was my 61st birthday. And I remember my sister said, why did John see an angel? Why didn't we? And I said, Mary Jane, we don't need to see an angel. We know they're here. We walk by faith and not by sight. I remember going through it thinking, God, all things work together for good, even stage 4 cancer. And I would feel him saying to me, you know, you don't really hear an audible voice, but I felt that he was telling me, yes, even stage 4 cancer, you'll see. Boy, it took me a while, but, you know, from the minute we got that diagnosis, Meredith, I feel like I was praying without ceasing, even in my sleep all the time. And I got so much closer to the Lord. I hadn't been. I had been caught up in kind of the fame of being on TV and the success and the money, and we had it all. We did this beautiful home, and you know, now I live in it alone, and I had this family, and it's just a house, and I can't wait to downsize to a condo. But you know, through Beth's passing, I felt God speaking to me that it was time to do something different. And so out of her passing, I formed Fearless Faith Ministries with two buddies of mine. They stayed a week after the funeral. They knew after everybody left, I really need them. And I took them out to lunch on Friday, and I knew I was going to tell them what God was laying on my heart. I also knew they were going to both say, yes, we want to help you. I said, I'm in my 60s. I've done so little for God. I want to do something significant. And they agreed. And we named it Fearless Faith because of the way Beth was fearless. You know, when my brother-in-law, who's a minister, came and sat on the bed, he was shocked by what he saw, because Beth obviously didn't look like yourself. And he said, how are you doing? And she paused and she said, I'm sad. I don't want to leave you all, but I'm not afraid. And she faced it fearlessly.
Dan's journey with Beth changed his life and changed his priorities. After 29 years at QVC, he retired. He felt God calling him to write down their story. And the book is called Hurricane of Love, My Journey with Beth Wheeler. And it's filled with the lessons he learned about cherishing every moment and knowing God is with you, even in your darkest times, and how to love everyone around you like a hurricane, like Beth. You can find out more about it at hurricaneoflove.com. And Dan is following through on God's call to not retire to the golf course. He and his friends launched Fearless Faith, and every day they're encouraging baby boomers to use their time and resources to impact people with God's love. You can check out their morning cup of inspiration on the Fearless Faith Facebook page. We're so grateful to Dan for sharing his story with us. It takes a team to make each episode of Epic. Thanks to Jason Rakow and Ted Ross for help with production. I'm your host, Meredith Foster. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.